WTOP, this is Jason Fraley.
Hey, Jason, John Mathis here.
Hey, how are you?
Old, Jason, old.
Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and this is a real treat. We are joined by music legend, the ultimate crooner legend, Johnny Mathis, who's coming to participate in the Child Justice charity event, 4th Annual Heroes for Child Justice event here in Georgetown. Mr. Mathis, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, how did you get involved in this? I think it's their fourth year, but I'm pretty sure the organizers said that this is their first time they've ever had a live music act, and to get you is a huge coup for them. So how did they contact you to get involved here?
Well, you know, a lot of times I'm a golfer, and I meet different people on the golf course. I met a guy by the name of Tim Goodman on the golf course, and Timmy and I are pals. We play a lot of golf together. I have over the years been involved in a lot of charities, and Tim asked me if I would helping out with child justice, and I was more than happy to do it. I raised three of my brothers and sisters. I've got six brothers and sisters, and so I'm used to being around young people and trying to help them out whenever I can, because I had a lot of help when I was a kid.
So you're giving it back a little bit here. All right.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming and doing this for us. I know there'll be like a live auction, and of course you'll perform. Give us a little teaser of what sort of stuff we might hear if we come to this. I assume we'll hear the hits?
I don't know. You know what? Timmy Goodman is also a retired performer. And I think he played the guitar in the group that he was in long, long years ago. And he said, "I'll play for you." And I said, "Well, are you good enough? Do you know how to play, really?" Because he was playing a lot of rock stuff. So I said, you know, and he swears up and down that he can play my music. So Timmy and I, he plays the guitar. And Timmy and I are going to sing as many songs as he can learn how to play by then.
Oh, I love it. I want to take me back all the way to the beginning. I want to know when you first fell for music. When did you get your first instrument or you know, heard your first song on the radio? You know, what was the moment that you got bit by the bug, you think?
Well, my dad had six, seven kids before you could count them all. And, of course, he and my mom were partners in wherever they worked, and they were domestic workers.
Okay.
But Dad was always a singer, and he played the piano very well, never took lessons or anything. But I sat and listened to him play for many, many years, from the time I was a little kid, two, 3 years old. And he was my mentor. And he was my pal. I loved my dad just absolutely. He was the greatest guy in the world. We went hunting, fishing together, and we sat at the piano and sang. And at a very early age, he got me involved with a voice teacher, and before I knew it, I was making records. So that is the genesis of my musical career is my dad and my best friend in the world. Yeah,
I love it. Is it true that you at one point you're starting to get some traction in the music biz, but also weren't you training for some Olympic trials and you had to make a choice?
Well, you know, like most kids, I got involved in athletics in school. I was a pretty good high jumper. My claim to fame was that I broke one of the famous Bill Russell, the basketball player, you know, Bill Russell.
Of course.
He was a high jumper too, along with his basketball skills. And he had a few high jump records, in California, in the state of California. And I was high jumping and I broke one of his high jump records. So everybody got all excited about it. And, I got a lot of publicity out of that, but I did have a chance to go to the Olympics as a high jumper. But during the same week that I was to go to the trials at the University of California, I got my first opportunity to make my first recording in New York. So my dad and I said, looked at each other and said, well, you're going to high jump or you're going to go sing? So that was that. The high jumping went out the window and the singing started.
What a cool story. So if I asked you who the better high jumper was, you or Bill Russell, you'd probably just shrug and say, it's not for me to say.
Should say that, but you know what? He was so much better than I was. I mean, he's 6'9" tall, and I was 5'7". But we're still pals. And we talk about things like that all the time.
That is so great, so great. All right, well, let's take me into that song. It's Not For Me To Say. I love it. You'll still hear it on, God, almost every Scorsese movie. It's all over the place. But do you remember where you were when you first saw all those lyrics and sat down to record that?
Oh, gosh, I don't.
Well, then what about the song do you think had made it such a hit and put you on the map and is still so timely all these years later? What about the song? What do you love about it?
I was just lucky. I mean, you know, I was, 18 years old when I recorded that, and I was in the middle of New York with all of the competition. I was at a very, very prominent record company called Columbia, and there were all sorts of extraordinarily gifted people on the, you know, much, much bigger stars than I was, and they got their music played, and I was very lucky. I recorded 4 songs initially for my contract, and one of the songs was "It's Not For Me To Say," but there was also another song called "Wonderful, Wonderful," mm-hmm. and then there was one called "Chances Are," mm-hmm. and the one called "The Twelfth of Never," and so I did them all on one. Recording session, and the record company kept them, and they released one at a time. And I think you mentioned "It's Not For Me To Say," which was the first one that they released. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me what makes "Chances Are" so special? Because I love it, but I'm sure you're asked to sing it all the time and probably talk about it in interviews all the time, too, full disclosure. But there's a reason. It's so magical to me. But to you, when you're singing it out there night in, night out, why is it special to you?
Oh, gosh. I'm very proud of the fact that at such a young age, I had some really good songs to sing. Because that was the rock and roll era when I grew up. And some of the other kids that became quite famous singing rock and roll. But I had studied voice with a voice teacher for about 10 or 12 years prior to my first recording. And I had things that I wanted to do vocally that you couldn't do if you were singing rock and roll. So I was very happy with the result of my first recording, "It's Not For Me To Say."
Awesome. Well, those songs are going to echo through time, as well as "Misty," as well as, you know, there's so many great ones you did. "The 12th of Never," there's so many, like we could go on and on, but I think one of the things I think that's kept you around all these years is some of your holiday songs. Like, "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas." I think you have the definitive version of that. What does it do to you inside to, A, do you ever get tired of it? And B, does it just fill you with joy to know that you're walking around and all over the country, all over the world, your song's playing next to these Christmas lights? And at the happiest time of everyone's year, you know, you're the soundtrack.
Yeah, my dad and my mom made Christmas for my 6 brothers and sisters and I really quite wonderful. We didn't have any money. We weren't, I like to say we weren't poor, we just didn't have any money. But we had lots of food because my mom and my dad were fabulous cooks, and that's the way they supported the family, is they cooked for a lot of wealthy people. And, of course, during those holiday seasons, that was the rigueur to have all this wonderful food stuff. But as far as the Christmas songs were concerned, that was a big deal for a large family at Christmas. And so the first thing that I did after I had a couple of hit records on Columbia was to record a Christmas album. Because my mom and my dad were my best pals, and I wanted to do something for them. And Christmas has been very good to me as far as my recordings are concerned. And the ones that you mentioned have become very, very instrumental in my career.
Awesome. Now, just looking back on it, when you think about all your, let's say, you know, your crooner contemporaries of the time, you know, you had your Sinatras and Tony Bennett's and Nat King Cole's and Lena Horne's and Bing Crosby. And even nowadays we get, you know, Michael Bublé's and Harry Connick Jr. Some people are keeping it around, as well as yourself, sir. But who, was there anyone in particular that inspired you the most, or you were like, dang, I love that sound. If I could be half as good as them, Johnny Mathis will be on the map.
Well, Nat King Cole was my favorite singer of all time, still is. And also one of my favorite human beings. He was a lovely man who befriended me at a very early age. I was besotted with his music and the way he sang. He was a brilliant musician who had, priorly to his singing, had made his living playing the piano. So I was very adamant about making sure that everybody knew that my big vocal hero was Nat King Cole. But, of course, as you said, I had a lot of vocal heroes, and a lot of them were opera singers because my voice teacher insisted that I listen to and perform some operatic arias and what have you. So I was all over the place musically, singing opera and jazz and rhythm and blues and whatever was de rigueur at the time.
Love it. So you just said that Nat King Cole was your hero, your idol. But now that you're the seasoned vet and you're the idol of other people, is there anyone else, let's say, either in recent years or just over the decades, really, and, you know, different eras of music that have come up to you and held you up as their sort of Nat King Cole? You know, has anyone came up to you and gave you that feedback where you were like, I had no idea that I influenced X, you know?
Well, not yet, but I'm sure simply because I've been around so long and made so many recordings that a lot of young people have listened to my songs. I certainly hope so. And if, in fact, I have influenced anybody vocally, the only thing that I used to try to get across to anybody, especially the young kids who want to make a living in show business singing, is, you know, try to find somebody and take some lessons so that you don't harm your vocal cords. That's the only thing that I've really been kind of adamant about, because kids don't, you know, they have a little success with one recording and then they go for it. But the more you can learn about producing your voice properly so that you can maintain it over the years is very important. Some of my favorite singers in the world that I've hung out with and I've recorded with are no longer singing because they didn't study voice at an early age. They had a lot of success vocally, but the voice sort of gave out on them, and it wouldn't have happened if they had spent some time, you know, learning to produce the tones properly. So I'm always yelling and screaming at kids saying, okay, take some lessons, make sure you're singing right. You know, you don't want to hurt your voice.
Yeah, so take care of that instrument. Take care of those pipes.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, you've been more than generous with your time, so we'll cut you loose. But just sort of in closing, final question, bringing it back around to the 4th Annual Heroes of Child Justice event. Why, if our listeners have been heard this, why should they come out?
Well, it's quite a wonderful organization, and I'm very happy to be associated with Tim Goodman, who has long ago, I don't know, he has been instrumental in supporting this group. And when I was a kid, the only thing I had was the support and the help of grown-ups. So I'm trying to emulate that in my charity work. And hopefully we'll get some results and help some kids who could use some help. Very, very important.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. Again, everybody, Johnny Mathis on WTOP. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason. Bye-bye.